You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Matthew Saneker. Matthew, it's good to have you here this
morning.
Thank
you, Eric.
So, Matthew, the way this show begins is just with the question, who are you? What do we need to know? What are the big pieces of your life, of what you value or who you are, what you do, the labels that we need to know to start this conversation?
That is a huge question. Well, without trying to sound, I don't know, some of the things I'm thinking of might sound kind of pretentious, but
don't worry about it. We can dress it down.
But I, over the past couple of years, I really think of myself as being someone who is a person of prayer and trying to engage with people in that way. Most of the time, not really overtly, but trying to approach people in the world very intentionally and respectfully and open-heartedly.
Mm-hmm. So that's where that's defined your life in the last couple of years. How did
I'd say for a very long time.
Okay,
but
more
intentionally. More intentionally.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah. So, what brought you to that awareness? Why did you need to start living this way more intentionally?
I'm not really sure. It just feels like I'm drawn to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been drawn to things that are sort of mystical or religious, spiritual. That's kind of a complicated word, but
right.
I've felt really drawn to that ever since I was a kid. You know, I was raised in a Christian family, and I remember, I think it was in the fourth grade, you know, we got to choose an instrument, and even gets me a little choked up to think about it. But so the instrument that I wanted to play is the trumpet, because angels play trumpets.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I think even as a little kid, I kind of had that draw, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of, you know, moved around a lot in my life. Mm-hmm. And I think in different communities, I've found different people who were very intentional about their lives, and for whatever reason, I've gotten just spontaneous connections with them that then lead me in a direction of exploring something new.
Mm-hmm.
In that realm, I've studied, or I don't even know if you call it studied, but practiced Native American spirituality. Lakota specifically,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sweat lodges and prayers and healing ceremonies with some folks that I met in Seattle when I was living out there. Yeah, I've studied Western esoteric practices and, you know, everything from astrology to tarot, mm-hmm, to what you might call ritual thurgy, which is like just reaching out to divine energy in various forms,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Getting in contact with that. And most recently, in 2013, I kind of came full circle, started attending the Episcopal Church here in Ithaca. You know, it's interesting in that way of coming full circle. At some point when I was in Seattle, I'd say around maybe 99 or 2000, you know, I'd studied Buddhism and Taoism and Native American traditions. In some ways, I felt like there was something foreign, I guess for obvious reasons, that there was always this way of being a little bit on the outside, maybe culturally, like, mm-hmm, I wasn't born in that culture or any of those cultures. So I started looking at Jewish mysticism,
mm-hmm,
you know,
Kabbalah.
Yeah, the Kabbalah.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And all their different ways of, in Hebrew, saying the name of God. And that was very compelling to me. And then inside of that tradition, you know, there's all these different relationships with what they call the Sephiro. So they have this diagram called the Tree of Life. Each of these Sephiro, there's 10 of them, 10 points of emanation from the ultimate nothingness or beingness,
mm-hmm,
of,
mm-hmm,
God, just,
mm-hmm,
kind of the ultimate mystery, and down through these different spheres until it manifests here on Earth, which is the 10th sphere. There's all these different correspondences with the spheres. So you can take that into astrology. It's a really wide open system that's interesting to explore. Okay.
And it sounds like you have a systemic mind, so you would like to make those connections.
Yeah. So, of course, all of that is, it's very foreign to so many people. But in 2013, I was going through a divorce, and that was very hard. So I started going to church. I just knew, okay, I need some place to pray, not just, you know, me at home, sort of solo, but to be in a place where people have been praying for a long time. There's a certain energy to that. There's kind of a circuitous conversation here, but in 2012 I went to China for work, and I met some folks that are Buddhist there and visited a couple of temples. So there were monks and there were just people praying, there was tourists, and being in a place where people have been praying, you know, probably in that location for easily 500 or maybe 1,000 years is really powerful. I mean, you can feel that energy. And I got that same feeling when I walked into St. John's Episcopal Church for the first time and sat down, and I hadn't probably been in a Christian service in years. I think I'd attended, you know, some weddings, maybe a Christmas service, probably in easily, I don't know, 15 or 20 years.
Right.
So
it was not home anymore.
Yeah, it did feel a little, it felt like home, but at the same time, it was like coming back to something and kind of being there for the first time. But yeah, so I kept going there, and I found a lot in the liturgy, and there's this structure to it where, you know, you're saying the same prayers and going through the same actions every Sunday. And for me, one of the important things there is the Eucharist, which is in some ways a very mystical piece of the service. You are partaking in the Spirit of God.
The very being of God.
Right. Yeah. And then for a while, I was very sort of careful, or almost too careful to, you know, it took me about a year or so to finally get up the courage to like go to the anything social there. Because I was feeling like, okay, well, I've studied all these things and practiced all these different things. And, you know, if people know that, you know, will I be Christian enough? Or, so there was a little fear in that, fear maybe of judgment, but ultimately I found people there to not have that sort of judgment, which was really refreshing. Yeah. At one point I was talking to the priest and just really wanted to kind of open up this conversation to say, okay, I'm really here now. Here's the other places that I've been, and like, what do I do with that? Because I don't feel like the things that I learned from Buddhism, especially, or for many of the other more what you might call esoteric studies, I don't feel like any of them are negated inside of mainstream Christianity. I think they just kind of add to what's already there. Like, I think everything you need can be found in there, but all the other stuff, I don't know, maybe just my particular mindset of wanting to explore things, you know, it's just kind of looking at things from another angle. Yeah. And he was very both accepting and, you know, basically said, no, all those things, you can bring all that with you. And, you know, it's a part of who you are. It's a part of the path that you've taken to get here. And maybe paraphrasing him a little bit, I don't know if he would agree exactly with what I've just said, but I think he would, that, yeah, you can bring all of that with you.
We're going to cut to music. It's a little later than we normally cut to music, but that's a good, I mean, it's a powerful story of your spiritual journey and how you carry on. You've kept adding pieces to it, but you now have a kind of a root home, it seems like. You wanted to play a U2 piece.
Yes.
Peace on Earth. Okay. We'll start with that, and then we'll come back and we'll follow up.
Okay. Thank you.
On Earth, we need it now. I'm sick of all of this hanging around. Sick of sorrow, sick of the pain, I'm sick of hearing again and again that there's gonna be peace on earth where I grew up. There weren't many trees. Where there was, we tear them down and use them on our enemies. They say that what you mark surely overtake you, and you become a monster, so the monster will not break you. And it's already gone too far. You said that if you go in hard, you won't get hurt. Jesus, can you take the time to throw a drowning man a line? Peace on earth. Tell the ones who hear no sound, whose sons are living in the ground, peace on earth. No, who's a wise, no one cries like a mother cries for peace on earth. She never got to say goodbye, to see the color in his eyes, now he's in the dirt. Peace on earth. They're reading names out over the radio. All the folks the rest of us won't get to know. Sean and Julia, Gareth, Anne and Breda. Their lives are bigger than any big idea. Jesus, can you take the time to throw a drowning man a line? Peace on earth. To tell the ones who hear no sound, whose sons are living in the ground, peace on earth. Jesus, in the song you wrote, the words are sticking in my throat. Peace on earth. Hear it every Christmas time, but hope and history won't rhyme. So what's it worth? This peace on earth. Peace on earth. Peace on earth. On
Earth. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Matthew Saneker. So, Matthew, prayer has taken on a much bigger role in your life in the last couple of years. Can you, so you're now leading, and you're mm-hmm. leading a local initiative, and so how did, what's this about? What's happening?
Well, so I touched briefly on this conversation that I had with the priest at our church. I mean, he's now, he's left Ithaca and is living in Dallas, but when I was talking to him about, you know, meditation practices that I have, that I've practiced and continue to practice, and how that was evolving for me mm-hmm. in trying to explore those practices within the Christian tradition, because I know that they exist. You know, at the time I was like, I know they're here. They're not sort of out in the open as much as, say, you know, like if you go to the monastery at Namgal,
sure.
you know, that's a regular thing. They have meditation all the time. and So I said to him, you know, if you know of other people in the church that, you know, are following these practices or, you know, are studying, you know, Christian mysticism, I would be really interested if you could kind of point me to them, you know, maybe introduce us or ask them if it's okay that you, you know, if you've had similar conversations with them, can you introduce us?
I hear the very tentativeness in your voice too.
Exactly. You know, it's because I think in a lot of ways that, the mysticism, a lot of that esoteric part of Christianity for so many centuries has been, it's either in a monastery where it's sort of safe, you know, contained.
And normative.
And yeah. But when it's outside of that controlled environment, I think it feels, there's something feels dangerous about it, or, you know, it's uncontrollable.
Or it's just odd.
Yeah. Yeah.
For some people. Yeah.
And so his response to me was, I think that there are some people in the church that would be interested in that. And why don't you lead that group? And my initial response is sort of like, who, me? Like, I've only been here a couple of years, and, you know, I'm sure there's somebody else that knows this far better than I do. But I took him up on it. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And so he, you know, took it to the leadership of the church and to see how would they would feel about having a contemplative prayer service on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And they thought that was good. And he basically just said, pick a day. Mm-hmm. So we settled on Wednesday evenings. So we've been doing that, having a contemplative prayer service every Wednesday evening for a little bit over a year, maybe a year and 2 months. Mm-hmm. It's been really good. I definitely have, you know, the handful of people that come more regularly than others, mm-hmm. but we've also had, you know, people from the church that maybe they've come once or twice. And I've had people just come in off the street because they were walking by and the door was open.
Right.
So, which is, I think, feels like a really powerful thing. It feels like something people need.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And I don't know, I have this sort of image, I'm sure it's from movies, but of, you know, maybe 100 years ago or even further back, where, you know, the church door was always open. Like, you could always just walk into the church and, right. and pray in a sacred space. And
yeah. I grew up in that kind of an environment. Yeah. I would go to the church on my lunch break when I was working at the grocery store and sing just a cappella, just to fill the space with my own meditation and prayer.
Yeah. I had one man come in actually one Wednesday evening, just as we were getting ready to pray. And he was at the back of the church, and I went back to greet him, and he just started singing Amazing Grace, and just at the top of his lungs. It was really powerful. And he said his friend of his, that who was, you know, a generation older than him, used to bring him there when he was a kid. So that he hadn't been in there in years, and the door was open, and he walked in, and yeah, on his way to work.
Wow. So. Wow. That's a very powerful story.
Yeah.
So you had this image at the beginning of the show where you talked about, you know, playing the trumpet because the angels sounded the trumpet. Well, right. And I get this sense there's part of you that's busting out,
right.
You know, and you're trying to reach out, and I don't even know if you know what's behind it, but there's an energy that you have to call people out in a positive way. And this is about this vigil on the inauguration weekend. For some of whom it will be prayer or meditation, or it may be a variety of different forms. But what are you trying to do with that? How did that emerge? How did that come out of this practice of prayer, leading the Wednesday evening contemplative prayer?
Well, I think one of the things that has been sort of a fruit of the practice has been just I'm more open to And this is going to sound really out there, but more open to hearing the voice of God.
Mm-hmm. Or sensing, you know, that there's something for you to do.
Right. Yeah. Sort of saying, oh, okay, I'm here. What can I do?
Right.
And just tell me where to go. And I think it was about a week after the election, you know, the whole campaigning and all that stuff, it was so divisive. And I think election night was really hard for a lot of people. Obviously, I mean, we hear about it in the news, or we had heard it about it in the news. And so it was, you know, part of me is like, okay, what can I do to be a voice for something positive? Like, there's got to be something positive that can come out of this feeling like very negative energy. And I woke up in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m, I think it was a Wednesday morning, and with the words to pray for peace, pray without ceasing, came to me. That's funny, when words come like that, it's not like there's some other voice that I'm hearing say them. It's really, it's like they're being said to me, but it's almost like in my own voice. You know?
It's in your head.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
The sound in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a certain, there's a certain feeling of that it's not me.
Right.
Not there's just me.
Right. No, no. There's a purposeful, but I hear you say it, there's a, there is a purposefulness to it that becomes like a mission that, I mean, it's kind of like tacit knowledge. Mm-hmm. I tell this story periodically. I was when I was in seminary, I watched this. I was looking out the window of the seminary. Seminary was one of the happiest times of my life.
Yeah.
I was just engaged in critical work and self-reflective work, and everything was very, very rich. Mm-hmm. And I looked out the window and I saw this squirrel running on this branch, and I said, "That squirrel's going to fall." And before I got the words out, it had fallen. And the same thing happened a few months later when I was washing dishes at my father-in-law's house, looking out about 12 miles away. And I learned a few months later that there had been a virus going through rodents in the New York metro area. And I had known something that I couldn't articulate. But I said, "That squirrel's going to fall," both times, and the squirrel fell. It's not like the superstitious sort of thing, but it's just that I knew that there was something different, and I knew what to call it. And I just blurted it out. And I think that many times when things come to us that clearly, we have all this stuff that's going on around us. It just makes sense. Where does it come from? I don't know.
Yeah.
But if we call it God, or if we call it just ourselves, we're not honest.
Right. Yeah.
Either claim is too much.
Yeah. when you say that, of that being in between, either myself or God. So one of the practices that I had studied, and I feel very much in touch with, different cultures call it a different thing, but finding one's, or having a conversation with one's holy guardian angel is one way of talking about it. Other people, like the Lakota, when they gloss it into English, it's a vision quest, but in Lakota, it really means, crying for a vision. So you go out, you know, anyway, and then you're
for a vision.
Right.
Yeah.
So you listen to that spirit that exists and can be a messenger between you and God. So I feel like that happens.
So what is happening with this prayer for this vigil for peace?
Sitting there in bed at 3 a.m, I thought, you know, yes, this is a message for me, but maybe this is a message to me to get other people to do the same thing. And so I sent an email to a friend of mine who's also an Episcopal priest, and was kind of, it was the, litmus test, or just testing the water of, you know, do you think this sounds like a good idea? Mm-hmm. Do you think people be interested? Do I sound crazy? You know, and you know, he fell on the side of being very enthusiastic and saying, yes, I think it's a great idea. I think you should pursue that and put it out there and see how people respond. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of very enthusiastic response from a lot of different people in the community. I think at this point we're up to somewhere between 10 and a dozen congregations or groups of people that are interested in participating. So I sort of put it out there as, you know, here's an idea I have. Let's see if we can pray, you know, get together on Thursday evening and start praying through the inauguration and through all of the things that are going to be happening around the inauguration. Pray through Friday and Saturday and even Sunday. And initially I was thinking just, you know, Thursday through Saturday, just to kind of contain it a little bit. And then because of feedback from other people, extending it, right. You know, making it bigger.
Right. And what is your hope that some people will come together what's the plan or the non-plan?
Yeah.
I mean, because this is organic and this is unfolding. So, how would you describe what you're at? What you're inviting people to do?
First of all, to come together in prayer or meditation or just with the energy of peace. Mm-hmm. I think it's really powerful, and I think my hope is that it will be an antidote to a lot of the anxiety and fear and anger, a lot of the energies, divisive energies that we've been feeling in our country and even in our community. And for people that are choosing to protest, I know there's going to be a huge protest mm-hmm. in D.C. Mm-hmm. There's going to be one here in Ithaca. If people are choosing to do that they have a place where they can retreat from that energy. That energy can be very, I don't know, it's the right word. It can feel overwhelming. It can feel somewhat dissipating. And I guess as an antidote, you know, having a very centering and quieting place to be. Or even if people, you know, choose to do one and not the other, having that energy in wherever the group of people are at any particular time that are praying, to have that energy sort of spread out. And even if people don't know what's going on, just, I guess, mellow out some of the protests. The anxiety and the anger and fear.
Well, and I mean, and you're swimming in fairly deep waters.
Yeah.
Protest can be ostensibly intellectually about an issue,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of times it really is a furtherance of us versus them,
right?
And a form of self-righteousness.
Yeah.
Which is at bottom. In that vein, is immature,
yeah,
not complete or not whole,
mm-hmm.
and coming back to a space where you can consider, because there are people, and this is the tricky part, because the way you have described it lends it like could be perceived as a little bit of a way station for protesters, people who weren't happy about the outcome of the election. But
right.
there were people who weren't happy about the outcome of the election who voted for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They just weren't happy about anything.
Yeah.
And we as a country haven't faced each other except to coerce each other with programs
right.
for the last 40 or 50 years. And now we can't not do that if we do more escalating. I mean, it's not going to be pretty.
Right. And I think the piece that you said about wholeness, and I think in prayer or in I guess, a spiritual pursuit of that kind, I guess. I don't know how else to talk about it, but in prayer, ultimately, when it's not just something that we do, you know, just on Sunday or Saturday or just one mm-hmm. day of the week or whenever, in an isolated place at an isolated time, but to live a little more fully into that, Lent moves us towards wholeness. And I think at that point we can see each other as being more human and not just the other at the other end of an issue that we feel, you know, one way or another about.
Right. There are lots of books on prayer out there and meditation. Mm-hmm. I have found almost none of them useful. Because I'm a real experiential learner, so mm-hmm. when I learned to meditate, I learned with people who were experienced at it, and yeah. we did it together.
Yeah.
A book that was helpful for me was a book called Primary Speech, which was written by two psychologists who were also members of the faculty at Union Seminary, but also at Columbia University medical school.
Okay.
And they describe primary speech as that form of communication which is absolutely whole and direct when you need to give words to prayer, which is most people these days associate the term prayer with spoken words, and meditation becomes the silent part, but that's not unless you have the contemplative prayer. So there's lots of confusion.
Yeah.
But they had this way of talking about how to speak directly from the experience so that you could convey to another the real truth of what you knew,
mm-hmm.
No more, no less, not too big, not too small, but you would also then be able to listen to the primary speech of another person, because it's not manipulative words. It's words that are earnest and direct.
Right.
And I think that's what you're calling for.
Yeah.
And my hope since this, in part of this, because it's a small part of it, is I'm hoping that we'll get some people who don't consider themselves not religious or not spiritual,
mm-hmm.
who may be open to considering how to talk with people whose values, hopes, experiences are so very different that they can engage each other in this primary speech sort of way without feeling attacked or the need to defend.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up a couple of psychologists, because I think in our society now, where fewer and fewer people consider themselves religious,
lots of people go to therapy.
Right, right, and that's a way that. It's another way of relating to being human and relating to each other. But I think of Carl Jung and all the work that he did with archetypes and, you know, sort of this recognition that, you know, these archetypes exist totally outside of any individual person, but then they also exist inside of mm-hmm. every person. And we all have those as a common, you know, sort of set of ways of being. And then another interesting one is Carl Rogers, who, and I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. This is just from my background in school, but, Carl Rogers, his modality was about, empathetic listening and, what he called having unconditional positive regard for another person. So basically it's like this universal love or compassion. And I think, you know, if you're not religious, and you maybe those are a couple people that might be interesting to check out.
Right. And I want to play with that a little bit, because positive regard can be seen as this, almost syrupy affection. which sometimes envelops the person in your projections.
Mm-hmm.
But a positive regard stands really in contrast to a negative regard. When you are positive towards something, you are open to it, so you're not aggressive or defensive or anything, so you can behold it. Whereas if you're having a negative feeling, you have shut down, and that reaction will shut the other down.
Yeah.
And so the positive piece is what allows discovery to happen in my experience. And I think that's the spirit in which you intended those words. But but many of these people have their practices have been popularized in ways that make them have funny sorts of associations. Okay. So this is an event that will be taking place in multiple locations.
Yep.
From the 19th of January through the 22nd.
That's right.
Thursday through Sunday. And I want to talk a little bit more about your experience, but I want to make a couple of announcements of it. And how do people reach you to find out how they might participate?
Well, I don't know if we can put my email address on the website.
We can say it on air.
Great. I'll just spell it out.
So if you're comfortable with that.
Yep. And it's Matthew Sanneker, MATTHEW. And then a dot, Sanneker, SANAKER, at Gmail. So just contact me via email. And
Matthew.Sanneker at gmail.com.
That's correct.
SANAKER.
That's right.
Yeah.
And another one, if you're on Facebook, I've created a Facebook page for an interfaith, trying to think exactly what I called it, interfaith prayer for peace with the word Ithaca in there. Might be Ithaca Interfaith Prayer for Peace.
Right.
So, and I'm hoping, so there's this event. I'm also hoping that conversations will continue to happen and this will not just be a one-time thing. But so that as we solidify a schedule, I'm going to create events on that Facebook page and that can kind of give, I have a feeling we're going to come to a point where we're not quite finished scheduling it and it's going to be a week away and publishing something somewhere is going to be difficult. So just that is going to be sort of our real time. All right. It's 8 o'clock on Thursday night. Right. Where should I go?
That's where people go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would imagine you can do an email blast to some people you've had contact with.
Yep.
Let's take a little music break.
Okay.
And then come back to let's go straight on. I want to continue this, but the pace, so there's a lot to kind of consider, I think.
Yeah.
You've rolled out this idea and it's been and you've offered it to people in several different ways.
Yeah.
Can you share that, because it's really important, I think, how you're offering this as an opportunity.
Yeah. So because I have participated in a number of different traditions, and there have been times where I think, hearing something in Christian language would have been hard for me to hear and connect to. And I think for people, in one tradition or another, hearing something in the language of another religious practice it's hard to figure out what they're really trying to say. So I've done the best I can to word things in a way that is open to and use a little bit of generic language about, the divine versus God and prayer and meditation versus just prayer.
Right.
And really, trying to invite people to be able to see and have a conversation or experience the way another culture or another tradition does what they do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, for those who are comfortable with another religious tradition, that works. But you've also invited people. At the pastor's meeting that you attended to discuss this, one of the rabbis in town said, our congregation has a multitude of opinions about this event and about the election, and we're not one. So there are others. There are others within the congregation.
Right.
So for many groups, the other may already be in their midst. So doing something in their own usual worship time, or if it's more of a spiritual or secular group, in their own meeting time, might make more sense than inviting others in or going out to to others. And yet there may be individuals who want to go to a service from a different religion altogether. And that kind of openness I have not seen offered in an event, certainly not here. And I'm not familiar with it anywhere. It's very open-ended, and it encourages people to organize something that would be meaningful to them.
Right. Yeah, I think that's really important. And that was a little bit of the feedback I got initially, you know, that I hadn't thought of. That there are people that may not necessarily want to go experience anybody else's way of doing things. But I still, I guess the overarching thing is not necessarily, it's not even really about that. It's just getting people together and praying for peace and having that energy in our community over this period of time.
Right.
So whether you're, you know, going to a specific vigil at a specific time, or if it's, basically I just invited, the rabbi and other people I've had a similar conversation with from other traditions to just consider, having that intention of praying for peace within your own, regular worship service.
Right.
Yeah. So that there's a way of, you know, you can participate in the overarching idea without doing anything other than what you would usually do.
Right. And I think we're bumping up against an assumption that we can all be together and do our own thing. It will be meaningful, but for many of us, it will be just uncomfortable and weird. And for some of us, it will be downright offensive. I mean, some of the feedback I get frequently from Jewish friends are that Christians completely misappropriate the Jewish scriptures, and they find it somewhat offensive to be in those settings, even though they can accept, you know, Christianity as an independent religion. There is that burn. And the same way with evangelical Christians, who oftentimes they have a certain attitude about the authority and inerrancy of Scripture and the role of community. And where they're going to do the most important work is with people who are close enough that they can trust them to work in those ways. You see? Because the work that needs to be done on some level is awkward.
And I think in order to really like respect and acknowledge the other, you know, just as an individual, we kind of have to start inside of ourselves. So as individual types of communities and individual congregations, we do have to start having that conversation within our own smaller group where it still feels safe. And before I think we can really participate with an other group, you know.
And I think there's a difference between doing a conversation which can be exploratory, searching, and profoundly insightful, but it's not necessarily worship. And that's so some people are very can be comfortable for the conversation part, but they're uncomfortable in the space of another person's worship because they don't want to endorse either what they don't understand or what they don't agree with. And part of allowing people, of honoring, I don't mean allowing because that's condescending. I mean honoring people's choices. We haven't honored our choices. And we haven't convinced each other that we need to be in the public sphere together. So in many ways, we don't know how to step out and be around each other when we're doing the most important stuff in our lives, so that others see us and we don't fear retribution, or that they see us and they may not understand, but they're curious and it starts a conversation.
Yeah.
That's born of of respect, but not necessarily endorsement.
Right.
And that's a distinction that we in these times have a hard time holding on to.
Yeah.
I can respect you as a person of weight and intention and a life of your own without endorsing anything you do.
Right. Yeah, I think you're really touching on something. I'm trying to think of there's been a couple of conversations that I've had that are very have spoken right to that point. And I think if we if you can sort of, I don't know, join in the event in your own space and in your own way, there's something about being able to say, okay, I am praying as a Christian and, you know, and I'm doing what's faithful to me, what's faithful to God, what's faithful to my community.
Well, these are my native ways,
and,
American ways or Wiccan ways or whatever.
Yeah. And so I'm really just speaking from where I'm coming from now.
Sure.
And I can also recognize and acknowledge, so I'm doing this in my way, and my neighbor who is a Muslim, I know on Friday afternoon they are going to pray in their way, and they are going to be praying to God in the way that they are faithful to, and they're also praying for peace, that we have a common goal, or we have a common vision of mutual respect, and you know, even if it's not understanding, it's just a acknowledgement of each other, seeing each other, and without judgment.
Right, and in that sense, not even the judgment of common.
Mm.
We live in the same physical space at the same moment in history.
Yeah.
For us to not damage each other any more than we already have, we have to honor that we occupy this space. And the notion of religious freedom or freedom of association allows us to acknowledge each other without assuming that there's anything common, but that we can't harm each other.
Right.
And too many times reference to common values or common things are used like a lariat to lasso people in together by virtue of the person who's making those claims or their tradition. So they'll try to lasso everybody, and some people don't want to be brought in. And
right.
That's fine in a place where we practice this respect for difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to find
the
balance of articulating this.
Yeah. Yeah, and so a lot of the conversations, the deeper conversations that I've had have been starting almost from a place of feeling there's a defensiveness or there's a, what are you asking of me? What do you really want from me? You know, I'm already doing what I feel like I need to do. Why do you want me to do this?
Right.
And those conversations have, you know, just by back and forth and actually having it be a conversation have opened things up to mutual understanding. And to me, I mean, that's what's touched my heart the most personally about organizing this is having those conversations with people of other faiths or other persuasions. You know?
Right. And understanding each other reciprocally doesn't mean agreeing.
Right.
And
right.
That's, we mess with this, what we bring to the language can be really problematic.
Yeah.
And all we're saying is that we live in a nation that's in a state of upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
Many didn't see it coming. Many of us did see it coming.
Yep.
But it's an awkward time, and we need to be careful with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think if we're going to, in some ways, step back from the brink or step to,
or not provoke fear.
Right.
Or reactionary.
Yeah. And to also have the, strength to confront discrimination or hate speech or hateful acts.
right.
when they present themselves to say, you know, it's almost like we build that sort of mutual respect. And if I have respect for my neighbor and I know who they are and I can in some ways acknowledge their religious practice as being just as sacred as mine, then I'm going to stand up for them. You know, when if somebody needs to be protected or defended, you know, whether it's from somebody within my faith or somebody totally outside, you know, that I think, yeah, having people of faith willing to stand up for other people of faith, even if it's a different faith.
Even when they important. Don't endorse the faith.
Right.
And that's the creed. Yeah. You stand up because people need to not be harmed.
Right.
Whether you endorse their lifestyles or their faith
right.
or not.
Yeah.
And our having standing in the community doesn't depend on our endorsing each other.
Right.
It depends on our acknowledging mm-hmm. that we are each one agents in this life and we have to make some decisions.
Yeah.
And we come from oftentimes vastly, irreconcilably different right. traditions. Although some of us may believe in common connections or mm-hmm. or pieces, but we don't have to.
Right. Yeah, we don't. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, the most common connection is just our shared humanity. If we can, and, you know, once again, I mean, not to say that somebody can't believe that this isn't true. That's a lot of negatives in there.
There may not be a shared humanity is what you're...
No, I think there really is. There's the shared humanity and that I think at the core of just about any religion, at least the ones that I've studied, there's the idea of love and respect for people, for mm-hmm. human beings, yes. you know?
and where it gets tricky is that we need to explore what that means.
Mm.
And very sometimes we can have conversations with people who are way far different places from us, and they can be meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes that's just at a very general, abstract level, and it right. really only gets deep and meaningful when we're with people who are really close to us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the steel sharpens steel, to use yeah. a military metaphor. But it's also where the depth can come.
Yeah.
And if we can, it's very hard for people who are devoted to a certain form of progressivism or liberalism or evangelical Christianity mm-hmm. or Anglicanism or whatever, who are so deeply invested in that, to be able to fully appreciate. They can nod that yes, it does exist in other places, but what you know deeply mm-hmm. is what you really experienced
yeah.
with some personal discipline. And yeah. you have been a traveler. You've traveled through a lot of different traditions.
Yeah.
But you are digging down.
Right.
In this Episcopal Anglican practice.
Yeah.
And I think you're also seeing where other people are digging down and they may not want to step out.
Yeah. And I think one of the comments that I've heard, and not just in this conversation, but in other conversations, is the, you know, people don't, you don't want to water things down or make it so general that it no longer has any meaning.
Right.
And I think that's sort of the beauty of our individual traditions is, you know, we can have this colorful diversity of faith and of practice, you know, like even within the Episcopal Church, we have people who are, you know, would celebrate a very contemporary service. Mm-hmm. Some people that are
traditional.
Yeah, very like Anglo-Catholic, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. lots of smells and bells, so to speak. And then folks that are somewhere in the middle.
Right.
And I think there's a beauty in that if we choose to, you know, view what people of another faith are doing and see the depth of their experience, even if it's not our experience.
And even if we can't relate to it.
Right,
and can't
right.
buy into it.
Right.
Yeah. But we yeah. own that it is what they're doing and what they need to do, and they have And we live in a place that gives them the right to do that.
Right.
And we have the right because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the thing for me about an interfaith event where everyone can participate fully in the depth of their own tradition, it sort of negates that idea of, well, we're just being so general that it doesn't mean anything.
One of the evangelical pastors who doesn't have a problem participating in multi-faith events says, I don't have a problem as long as my version of Christianity is not demeaned or my voice diminished when I share the truth of what I know. And I think if we, that's the spirit that you're bringing here. Mm-hmm. We don't know as a community how that can work.
Right.
Half of us claim some religious identity, about half of us don't.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing is opening up a conversation, which I'm delighted to see. Matthew, it's wonderful to get to know you.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric.
So what shall we close today's session with?
Let's see. How about magnificent?
Here we go.